Brett Ullman is a youth speaker. He's well known in Western New York and Southern Ontario because of the work he's done speaking to youth groups and doing youth conferences. I think he's probably spoken in other places as well. But let me welcome him to the broadcast. Brett, good to have you back with us here on Lifeline.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
All right. So your hometown is where?
I live in a little town called Ajax, which is about 45 minutes east of the city of Toronto.
Okay. We know it well. Our radio signal has reached Ajax and beyond for 53 years. So I don't know if you know about Besada Kia right there in the Ajax Pickering area, but they're one of our advertising partners. I think they're in Ajax. Yeah, so...
Oh, great.
All right. You're not so far from us, not so far removed. Good to have you along. I remember talking to you one time. I think it was at a Mission Fest event. I may have even spoken to you prior to a different speaking engagement type thing you did. And have you ever been to Kingdom Bound?
I've been to Kingdom Bound for the last, I think, 15 years.
Yeah.
So, yes, every year.
So there you go. That's why everybody ought to know Brett Ullman, because he's a regular at Kingdom Bound. So, so bottom line is that God has done some great things in your life that has given you a platform, obviously, to continue to share his grace and his mercy to others. But you have a fascinating story about how you came to faith in Christ in the first place. And remember you telling it to me. One time, a long time ago, but would you mind describing how it was that you met the Lord?
I think my story is actually a fairly simple one. I grew up in a great Christian home with Christian parents and a sister, and I've been in church most of my life. I think going into ministry was more the interesting thing from my standpoint. I was a full-time teacher with the Toronto District School Board. Never, ever thinking that I would do anything but teach. I was a teacher, my wife was a nurse, and speaking kind of grew out of nowhere. It was, it actually began at Kingdom Bound. I heard a year after I got married, a speaker speak on music and culture, and it was nice to hear someone who didn't kind of bash culture, right? You know, sometimes it's kind of like negative culture. And
right.
So I came back and I did my first talk at the church I was attending called Bayfair Baptist, and that probably was 18 years ago. And then 6 months later, I had a call from another local church, and it kind of grew and grew from there until probably about 7 or 8 years after that, I found myself teaching full time and speaking 45 dates a year, being married with two kids, and the list goes on, and that just, that doesn't work. So I left teaching, and I've been now speaking full time for 10 years, and, feel honored to have the chance to actually, you know, for me, I have the chance to research a handful of topics and then travel and speak on those topics across Canada and the U.S. So it's quite an honor to be able to do that.
All right, simple question, and I mean it sincerely, though. Do you ever feel like you're going to run out of things to say? Do you ever feel the pressure of like, I want what you're saying in me to be fresh, and I don't feel fresh right now?
I actually wish that I didn't have to have a job in that I speak on tougher issues. There's a book, Bill Hybels from Willow Creek in Chicago, once wrote a book called Holy Discontent. And I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's kind of the idea of what bugs you. And then he says kind of, well, then go into that. So years and years ago, media was the conversation that I first was kind of bothered by. So I've had a talk on media for 18 years. And the reality is that world isn't getting any better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sexualization of culture, the sexualization of, you know, movies and music and television. And so every time I kind of wonder, you know, will I be able to still have content? The world just keeps, you know, there's such a, you know, how do we as Christians connect our ancient faith with the modern sexualized culture we're in?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always had content for that. And then over the years, I've grown from... you know, just a talk on media, and I made a talk on self-harm called The Wounding Embrace, which I actually unveiled at Kingdom Bound for the first time, and it was one of those things I didn't know if it would ever work or not. It was a topic I knew I had some people who were talking to me about, but I remember probably about 600 or 700 people in the pavilion, and I said, like, who knows someone who struggles with these things? And I think every single hand in the room went up. And then a few years later, I made a talk on dating and then a talk on men, really challenging us as guys to be better fathers, husbands, and boyfriends. And in the last few years, I've made a few different talks, one on sex, and probably the talk closest to my heart these days is one called Walking Wounded, which kind of took over from my talk on self-harm, and it's more a talk on mental health. And that's kind of where I have a bit of my own journey in as well. And I have a brand new talk on pornography as well. But to answer your question, I find that those topics keep me going, and I don't know if there'll be a time when, like, it would be wonderful if we in the church world, you know, didn't struggle with mental health and didn't have struggles with pornography and media and music, and the list goes on. But I don't see that happening right now. So I'm lucky in that I have a platform which seems to be just ongoing with these topics.
I don't mean to belabor this point, but I'm going to ask you a follow-up to that. When you come to a place like Forest View Church of God, where you're going to be on March 11th and 12th, talking about all of these same things you mentioned, starts on Friday evening, the 11th at 7 o'clock, so it's like a Friday night, and then most of the day, Saturday thing, 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on March 12th. What do you do to prepare for that? And what I mean is, because you've done these talks, you've done them, you could probably do them in your sleep, except maybe the newer ones, because they're less familiar to you, but to connect yourself with what God's doing in that place, because you've probably not met the young people that are going to be at this event personally. God knows who they are, and he knows their needs, but it's got to be an interesting thing for a speaker to really get before the Lord and say, God, I've got some things to say that I think are true, but somehow you've got to make them real in the hearts of the kids who are listening. How do you go about that?
Well, I always say that I'm not a preacher, I'm a teacher. And I think I'm a teacher by not only by trade, but I'm a teacher by gifting. And so what I can do is to prepare. And I think that's also where I'm a little different than of some other speakers, in that I only do a very few number of talks, and they take me a long time to create, probably a year to 2 years. So my newest talk on pornography, I think I read about 100 books. I talked to dozens of counselors. I talked to probably 1,000 people who struggle with pornography. So I kind of try to get the big picture in that. But you're right. Then I head into a church, and every week's a little different, and every group I see is a little different. Mm-hmm. So I just know that I need to be read up and prayed up and kind of ready for that environment. And I always just pray that I'm open to the audience, because I think even though I have a template which is always changing of what I'm saying, mm-hmm. when you're at the front, you can see the audience respond and not respond to different things. And I just always hope that I'm led by the Spirit to address those issues that I need to touch on those topics, you know, like, because each talk, I mean, the reality is could be 2 or 3 hours each. So there's only right. certain things I can pull each night. So I kind of hope that I am led to pull the right things for that evening. But the real goal is to be a catalyst, you know, to spark something under the people that, not that I come in like some people have said a shotgun speaker where you come in and do a talk and leave, but hopefully that, you know, it's a catalyst for growth for that, you know, that family, that, you know, when I'm going to Forest View, those students and those parents can continue those conversations well beyond, you know, just the few hours of a few talks on a weekend.
Is it harder today to talk to kids about these issues than it was 18 years ago? The reason I'm asking is because of the emergence of social media being such a distracting force, and you said you've always kind of had a thing about media anyway, but I'm just saying the world has clearly changed. I've noticed in talk radio, I've been doing this for a really long time, that people approach subjects and issues differently than they used to, and there's a whole lot more of the me and the I going on in society these days than it seems like it used to be. And I don't know if that's changed your approach at all, but ultimately, you've still got a young person with a heart that needs to be directed towards the things of God. So I guess that part hasn't changed. But have you noticed a difference in 18 years?
I find, because I speak predominantly in the church world, I find that my job's getting a bit easier, in that I think that we as churches are more open to speak about topics that we might not have spoken about before. You know, topics like sexuality or mental health are becoming something we're struggling with in churches, and I think we're more open today to have topics. You know, growing up as a kid, I don't remember very few conversations on sex or pornography or these really tough Sure. topics. But I think more and more we're kind of saying, you know what, as Christians, we deal with these things. So how do we do it? Like, and how do we as leaders and pastors and youth workers, how do we come alongside our students and our parents and really equip them and help them and walk through those journeys? And so I find it's easier in that I think there's a willingness to be able to talk. Now, I mean, the conversation on social media is another whole conversation on the you know, it's a whole new world with social media and the addictions that I think I see most people where, you know, their phone never leaves their hands ever. And that's for students and adults as well. I mean, go to any restaurant anywhere in North America and no one even talks anymore. I was in an airport on the weekend and I laughed because there wasn't a single person speaking. Every single person was just staring at their phones. Whereas years ago, if you're in an airport, you're chatting with the person beside you and they're asking you what you're doing and you're talking about, you know, what they're doing. Like, but no longer. Like, everyone is just kind of, we're just stuck in our phones in social media. And sometimes I don't even know what we're doing. It's just kind of mindless, ceaseless activity on Facebook or Twitter. Like, it's never ending content, but you know, so what? What does the content mean? You know, is it helping us? Is it growing faith? Is it connecting us? Or I think most students and adults would say we're more disconnected today than we've ever been.
Well, I think you've got a lot of people in our listening audience would agree with you 100%. I would love to delve into some of these issues, including sex, porn, violence, suicide, all these things that are affecting kids, and talk some about that, because we've got hundreds, probably thousands of parents whose kids are dealing with these kinds of things right now, and or adults that are dealing with them, and even some of the self-harm things like cutting, those kind of issues, substance abuse, and maybe spend a little time talking about it, because it's going to be the focus of your journey here to the Western New York area when you speak at Forest View Church of God on Friday night, March 11th from 7 to 9:30, and also on Saturday, March 12th from 10 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. It's a special event featuring Canadian speaker Brett Ullman, who is well-known in our listening audience and in this area. Obviously, he speaks all over the U.S. and Canada, but particularly here in Southern Ontario and Western New York. But Brett, you mentioned some of the details and things that you talk about, and these are some seriously heavy issues. But they're issues that we have discussed here on Lifeline, and we're not afraid to talk about them here. Thankfully, churches are more receptive these days than they used to be on some of these subjects, but let's start with cutting, which you said has kind of morphed into a conversation about other self-injury kind of things and depression and all of that. And I don't know if you want to share anything about your own story there, but it seems to me that you've got a specific place in your heart, a real tender place in your heart for people that are struggling, particularly with things like depression. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. I was kind of laughing when you went to commercial. It's kind of like, we'll deal with sex, pornography, mental health, and media when we come back. I mean, each of those things could be sure. Entire day-long conversations.
Hey, bro, we're good on this show. We can handle it. This is no big deal. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I've always had a heart for people who struggle. I think any of us who work with students have a heart for people who struggle. So for many years, I spoke very directly to people who struggle with cutting and suicide and eating disorders and those things. And for years, I think I really just challenged people to deal with their story. You know, what is the root issue with that? What was ironic was that I ended up in 2012 going through my own journey. Now, here's complete irony. It was 4 years ago today that my own health journey began.
Oh, my.
I found myself a few years before that, working a little too much. I was doing about 250 speaking dates a year because I was presently working on a master's degree down at Wheaton Grad School in Chicago, a master's in leadership and evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
Loved the master's, but as a, you know, being a Canadian, I'm a foreign student in the U.S., so you had to, you know, it's expensive. So I'm speaking a crazy amount of talks. I remember once speaking 32 times in 14 days.
Wow.
And I look back now and that's just ludicrous. Like, it's crazy. But at that point in my life, I remember kind of thinking, okay, I paid for two courses today, or I paid for my flights. So I kind of knew my life was fully unsustainable. And I think my friends and family knew it. But all I would say is, like, if I can just make it to March 1st, 2012, because I knew I'd graduate at the end of February. So I got February 28th, or I got the, you know, diploma, and I got the acknowledgement that I was going to graduate, and thinking that the next day would be something different. But instead, I woke up a few hours early, which, you know, after a long journey of school, I kind of thought I might sleep in a little bit. Now, I mean, I have kids, that might only mean 8 o'clock, but
right.
Getting up at 5 wasn't what I expected. And that was actually the last time I've ever slept through the night in 4 years. I'm now up every sleep cycle almost every night. And so I had about 5 months of, I just call it chaos. I didn't really know what was going on. I remember once at a speaking date, I think it was in a town called Stratford, Ontario, and I'm speaking to, I don't know, 400 or 500 students, and my knees buckled as the world turned. Like, it was kind of like a scene out of a Matrix movie, as I thought I was going to fall over. And then, you know, the weirdest thing in my mind was, I started questioning, like, what do you do when you pass out in front of people? Do I just fall to the ground? Do, like, what? How do you actually do that?
What's the proper way to do that? Yeah.
Yeah, after 1,500 talks, I'd never in my life had this, and I actually started to see snow, and I knew I was in trouble, and so I said to the youth pastor, can I have a few minutes break? And within a few minutes, I had a nurse beside me, and I was drinking one of those little children's juice boxes as they questioned, was I diabetic and other things, and so I ended up finishing the night, and I went home and went to my doctor, and he said, wow, you have some anxiety, and put me on some pills and sent me on my way. And then I was okay for a few weeks. And then again, I wasn't. I was on tour doing, I think, 10 or 12 Catholic high schools. And one morning on my way to speak, I found myself crying in my car. And I remember I'm still, you know, rational in my mind. And I remember kind of thinking, like, I'm not okay. Like, there's just something not right. And again, I'd come home and, you know, more doctors and sleep specialists. And 5 months later, I was coming out of a McDonald's and the world spun. And it actually was enough that I really didn't, well, we were at a cottage and I didn't leave the cottage for the week. And then I came home and I didn't leave my house for many, many weeks. It took me, I think, a few months to make it the 104 steps to my mailbox. And that day to me was my breakdown, and I spent almost a year at home dealing with the same things that I now speak on, things like anxiety, and then I quickly landed in depression after not working, and things like panic attacks. And it was the first time for me, you know, as a leader and as a speaker, you know, I suddenly wasn't the person giving counsel. I needed help, and what I found was I found a lot of chaos. I found everybody, everywhere I went, offered me a different solution, mm-hmm. and none of the solutions made sense. Like, many people would say to me, have you tried Jesus? And I would look at them and say, what do you mean by that? And they're like, you know, Jesus. And I kind of laugh and go, like, it sounds like you're offering me a cookie. Like, what do you mean? Like, I prayed, you know, and I'm reading my Bible and other things. But, and then they look at me and say, you know what, I don't know. That's just something I've always said to people. And other people would say, you know, have you tried diet? Have you, you know, tried prayer? And for me, it was just an interesting time as a leader, mm-hmm. seeing how chaotic it was. And so I kind of put aside my old talk on self-harm and began, while I was at home not working, to design a talk that I have now called The Walking Wounded, which is really the answer to me of, what do you do if someone walks up to you and says, I'm struggling with anxiety or I'm struggling with depression? How do we have a biblical yet practical? And those words are not oxymorons, right? Things have to be biblical and practical.
Right.
So if someone, like if a mom or dad are listening, or if, you know, a student, like if someone walks up to you and says, I'm struggling, how do we deal with that? And so I spent many months kind of printing off emails and looking at what people had said. And in the end, I came up with a very simple process that I liked. It was just the old acronym, body, mind, and soul. And it's been interesting how some people don't like that. And my pastor at my church once said that people won't like it because of the order and the emphasis of those things. And I've always kind of said to people, there is no order and there is no emphasis. I mean, almost every church I've ever been to, as their mandate says, meeting the emotional, the spiritual, and the physical needs of people. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I've heard that everywhere I go. And the goal really is, you know, if you don't know what's happening, how do you know what the solution is? I once was dealing with a 32-year-old guy who was struggling with cutting, and I kept saying to him, have you been to your doctor? And he kept saying, you know what, my church is anointing me with oil each week, and, you know, I'm going to be fine. And after a few months, you know, he'd be writing me more and more, and I said, go see your doctor. And he wrote me probably a week later, and it was kind of a sobering email where he said, you know, my blood work came back and I have leukemia. You know, self-injury is hurting yourself in order to get beyond overwhelming feelings, thoughts, and emotions. And he was hurting himself because his body was hurting. And of course, there's a spiritual component to things in life, but he, you know, the body for him, you know, he needed to go see his family doctor and figure out what was going on. So I say to people always, go see a doctor, go see a counselor, you know, get some framework to look at how you can, you know, for me, deal with my anxiety and how to help my family cope during those times. And then soul as well, right? Pray and fast and study and, you know, even getting into the, you know, restoration prayer kind of conversations, like a Neil Anderson book, like Bondage Breaker and those things. But when you give a body, mind, and soul thing like that to people, if you're not a counselor, we don't counsel. But we can listen to people and then send them off to the people who can try to figure out what's wrong with them. And we can then, you know, we can, I always say, we don't fix people, we love people. And then, you know, we love on them and help them and surround them and give them the help they need. But they need to go to the doctor and a counselor, you know, and to God. And that's where we, you know, in the church, we as leaders and stuff can come alongside people and pray with them and walk through them. But for me, it's been a long journey. And to this day, you know, today was kind of a sobering day, realizing it's been 4 years that I struggle with anxiety almost every day of my life. Well, and it's something that has changed me. I mean, it's, I don't think I'll ever be the same person.
Well, and maybe that's a good thing, right? Because God's in the process of making us into who he wants us to be. And it's somebody would argue, well, God would never cause something like this. Okay, we don't have to have the did he cause it, did he allow it conversation. The fact is, this is what you're struggling with, and that God still loves you in the process, and that he still plans to use you in the process. But it's positively transformed your ministry in the sense that you now can speak more clearly to others who are going through this kind of thing, and with great compassion, because you know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here's something else.
It's a positive and negative, right? Because I, you know, in that way, I could have never sat in front of the audience as I do and speak, not only with the passion and conviction, but with the knowledge I have now. But at the same point, you know, these things, as anyone who struggles knows, affects my relationship with my wife and my children and my friendships.
Sure.
and even our faith. You know, when you struggle with depression, you it's hard to connect with anyone, yet alone to connect in that feeling way with God.
I don't know if you're familiar with the contemporary Christian artist, a woman named Plum. She goes by that name, obviously. She's got a real name, but Plum is her stage name. And she has a song called Exhale, which begins with the words, "It's okay to not be okay. This is a safe place." In the body of Christ, sometimes we want to button everything up and tie a little ribbon on it and make everything okay, slap a cliche on it and make everything just so. I think your story is a powerful one, Brett, because you're still walking through this valley. And if you don't experience some kind of a, quote, miraculous healing here on this earth that takes it all away right this second, it doesn't diminish what God is doing in your life or who he is. I think of Johnny Erickson Tata in the wheelchair for 50 years, who prays daily for healing. Nick Vujicic with no arms and no legs, who prays daily for healing. And they would love to have their bodies completely restored. And in your case, you know, your emotions or your mind completely healed from whatever's causing this. But on the other hand, this is what it is, and God is still sitting on his throne. And I don't know if I'm sure that you've gotten some pushback from people who say, just do this, just do that, and it'll all be okay, or you better get yourself, you know, completely healthy before you continue trying to speak about the things of God. Because Christians can be brutal when somebody's struggling, and I don't know what you want to say about all of that, but I'm grateful that you're persevering through this process as you experience God's presence in your current situation.
It's interesting. Like, some of it makes me laugh. I mean, I have 25 emails of people who've written me after they've seen me speak and chastised me because I'm sitting, which I have to laugh. I mean, I don't really know where else to go with that. You know, the idea of, you know, I think I have a verse where Jesus sat, so maybe I have a good theology why everyone should sit when they speak.
Right, yeah.
But the reality is, almost anyone I speak to with mental health will say that Christians have usually been the ones that have hurt them the most. And I would say that as well for me. I mean, I have some who've been helpful, but I've had a lot of, you said earlier, like cliche comments. You know, it's the everything happens for a reason, or all things work together for the good. And we say these statements, but we don't sometimes have, because we don't talk about them, these conversations enough in the church, we don't have almost any basic theology of, I always say, like, we don't even have a basic theology of suffering sometimes. I know you said a minute ago the why question, which is one that I struggled with, and it's the number one thing people write me, like, why me? Mm-hmm. Larry Crabb in his book Shattered Dreams says that A plus B doesn't equal C. We have this fallacy sometimes that if we're Christians and we're trying to live a Christ-like life, we therefore won't struggle. And it's just not true. I mean, the Bible doesn't say if you suffer, it says when you suffer. Mm-hmm. And I read a fantastic book a year and a bit ago because I was struggling with the why. It was always kind of a, did I do this to myself by working too hard? Or as you read through so many scriptures of, you know, God tests his people to know what's in their hearts. And it's kind of like I had this back and forth, which one is it? And then I read a book by Richard Winter. I think it's called When Things Go Dark. And he said there's five reasons we suffer as Christians. And this was, to me, a huge one. Number one, he said, is Genesis 3. You know, we live in a fallen world, and we're broken. And our minds are broken, and our bodies are broken, and accidents happen sometimes. But how often do you hear after an accident someone say, Genesis 3? We as North Americans want to make it kind of, we always want to find the reason and the why. But today in Syria, in Egypt, around the world where war and famine and other things, no one uses those terms. But number one is Genesis 3. Number two is the sins of others. Number three is our own sinful nature. And I think I was arrogant. I think I thought that I could work too hard and not have a Sabbath and not do those things, and I would be okay because I'm tough enough. And the reality was, for some people, their body breaks or their marriage breaks. And for me, I think it was kind of my mind. And the last two would be Ephesians 6:12. I mean, we don't like that conversation, but like if there's Jesus and angels in heaven, then there's Satan and the demonic. And I don't think we should go there right away. I think, I mean, the number of 15-year-old girls that write me and say, my mom says I'm demonized. I have thousands of those. But it's a spoke in the wheel. And the last one is God's discipline and discipleship. And I always just say now, the answer to those, the why, is irrelevant. Because as a Christian, as a follower of the way, you know, my life, my ministry, my health, my whatever is for his kingdom and his rule and his reign. So the why becomes irrelevant. And I like those five things. It's allowed me to kind of get a nice framework. And I think there's a lot of people who've had tragedies in their life, you know, death and accidents and cancer and these things. And we always want to know why. But the reality is that we always use the term, you know, and God causes all things to work together for the good. Good can come from these things. I don't like how we use that verse as comfort for people, because it doesn't mean that it will be good for you. But in the situation, you know, you can take whatever's happened, whatever tragic thing, and we can use it for God's kingdom.
That's a powerful reality and a powerful truth. Hang on just a moment. Brett Ullman is our guest, and we're talking about real life, talking about his story, obviously, and how God has met him in the midst of it and is using him to help communicate truth to young people all over the U.S. and Canada, even in the midst of his own struggles. Some of the other topics he talks about are sex and porn and violence, touches on the issue of suicide and substance abuse. Let me get to Jessica in Cheektowaga, New York. Jessica, quick question or comment for Brett?
Hi, Brett. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Yeah, well, my question to you is, I deal more or less with panic attacks, anxiety, like cleaning issues. And I just in the last maybe couple weeks ago, I hit kind of a breakdown and just broke down at the sink crying and just not feeling like I could just let go and know that I was okay. So, and my husband was nice enough to help me get through it and calm me down. But I guess my question is there any suggestions that you personally have gone through or recommend somebody going through a panic attack during the midst of it and how to work through it? I've put like scripture pieces by the sink in that area to kind of focus on and just recite and just kind of clear my mind. But is there anything else that you would suggest as, you know, your own experience, what you've done to get through your anxiety or panicking?
All right, so Brett's not a doctor, but you're a fellow struggler. What are your thoughts, Brett?
Well, I think I'm at 150 panic attacks, so I used to have empathy for people, and now I think I understand that conversation. There's two conversations in that. One is trying to figure out the reason that we're actually struggling with panic attacks. And the second one is what do you do while you're having one? I was on stage a few weeks ago and had a panic attack while I was speaking. And I mean, there's nothing better. I mean, that's sarcastic, but like, there's nothing better than having a panic attack while you're in front of a few hundred people.
Sure.
So the first one I would say, it's the same answer as I said before, right? It's going to a family doctor and finding out, you know, get blood work done, you know, make sure there's no thyroid issues or anything else. But I think one of the big things from a panic attack perspective is, and because it is anxiety-based, is looking at, you know, eating better, sleeping more, and exercising daily. There's such a simple thing I saw on Facebook the other week. Someone said, the most underused anxiety medication is exercise, and the most overused anxiety medication is food. And so it's, you know, let's eat better, let's sleep more, and, you know, so the body's huge. Go see a counselor to kind of walk through that, and of course we pray. But during the moments that it happens, I know for me, I usually just find it's best to remove myself from the place. So I really struggle in church. I wrote a blog last year that I wasn't in church for 4 months. Like most churches, you know, we have music, and, you know, it's fairly loud, mm-hmm. and so that sets us off if we struggle, and then suddenly it's really quiet as the pastor gets up to preach. And I found that there were just situations that when I am not feeling well and I don't have good sleeps, I know I'm kind of on the verge of a panic attack. I try not to put myself into those situations, which is hard sometimes mm-hmm. when, like for me, when I have to work or different things like that. So I've learned simple strategies of belly breathing. You know, like sometimes we breathe with our upper chests, and it's the belly breathing which calms us. There's a great quote from a guy named, I think it's Herbert Benson. He's a Harvard doctor who says, like, if you breathe like you're relaxed, you will become relaxed. And it's a very simple line, but it's so when it happens to me, I pray, I try to remove myself a little bit from the situation. So if I'm in a doctor's office or if I'm in somewhere, you know, you try, like, getting outside or getting out to your car is sometimes great, but then there's other people who have panic attacks while they're driving. All I can say is to give yourself some grace in those times, because I think we have them, and then we quickly, you know, our emotions kind of explode, and we deteriorate, and we struggle, and we ask why, you know, why is this happening, you know, how am I ever going to live? And the reality is you will get through a panic attack. I mean, they last anywhere from a few minutes to 10 minutes, and I find for me it then takes a few days to even come down from that. But I think it's you know, The diet and the exercise and the sleep are those foundations that we can physically work on. We can get strategies from our counselors to try to deal with that, and then our faith as well. But it's that same conversation I'd always come back to.
Well said. Jessica, great question. Thanks for calling. All right, I got to move here quickly to Larry. And then Terry, we'll finish up with you. It's probably all the calls we'll have time for. Larry, your thoughts here? You've got a question, I guess.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, by the way. I have a dear friend in our church who is struggling with depression, and whenever you go to talk to them, it's like pulling teeth to get a conversation out of them. Is there any approach that you can take to, and it's out of love I talk to them, is there any a special kind of approach or any direction that you give a person that is dealing with somebody like that?
Yeah, well said. Brett?
What's really hard is, and this is what I hear from people all the time, I have a loved one or a friend of mine who needs help, but they won't get it. And that's the hard, like, how do you force someone to get help if they don't want it? And I don't really know an answer to that. I know that I've dealt with people who are depressed and struggling, but it's until they come to a place and say, someone once said, like, the way you get change is you either give someone a vision of the future that's so amazing that they want to get there, or they hit rock bottom. And I think mental health is no different. Either we give them a vision and, you know, we talk and challenge about how they don't have to be that way. And that's where practically, too, you know, we can say to them, hey, I heard this guy on the radio. Like, why don't I take you to the family, a doctor, or I have a really great counselor our church uses. Can I drive you or take you there?
Right.
You know, or even then just can I pray with you? But if the person doesn't want help, then I usually just say to people, maybe we just pray that God brings someone into their life that for whatever reason they'll listen to. Right. Like, it's funny how sometimes someone won't listen to us, but someone else is this. It's like with children, right? Sometimes someone has to say the same thing to my kids that I tell them, and they'll listen to someone else, and they won't listen to me.
Isn't that true? One more quick phone call I want to sneak in here. Terry in Randolph, New York. You had a comment about depression, Terry. What's up?
Well, as I'm listening to the conversation, I'm in sales. I deal with a lot of people. I sell insurance. I'm always asking health questions and stuff. And I cannot believe how many people I'm dealing with. When you get down to you have any, you know, emotional problems or anything like that, when you're selling life insurance, it's almost always yes. Almost always yes. People are anxious and things like that. And I look at myself and I say, you know, what am I afraid of? What is causing me to be sad half of a day because of something I'm worried about or whatever? And it's really, for me, it really comes down to a control issue. I am trying to control all. I'm looking like a little kid all around me trying to control everything on earth around me, and I can't, and then I get all panicky. And it really has to come back to me. My daughter gave me a plaque that says on it, "Be still and know that I am God." I really have to surrender to God and say, I have control of nothing. I don't know why my neighbor got cancer and died two years younger than me, or why the kid down the road got killed on a snowmobile, or why right. this person's going to run the country and I don't like them. Or, I mean, I just have to trust God. There's no other way for me to have peace.
Let's stop there, and let me ask you, Brett, to respond to what Terry's saying. We're short on time. Have any similar thoughts crossed your mind about simply resigning yourself to the reality that you're in God's hands and you can't do much about it except trust Him?
Of course. I mean, as a Christian, there's not a lot of options. I will say with anxiety and depression, it's a continuum. I mean, so there's worry. I mean, when the Bible says don't be anxious, it's not talking about clinical anxiety. It's talking about worry. And so I would say that there are worriers, and then there's people with clinical anxiety. Like, mine's clinical anxiety. It's not that I'm worried about, you know, an interview today, or I'm worried about speaking tomorrow. There's something not in my brain right. There's serotonin or different chemicals. And the same is with depression. There are people who are a bit more blah, or, I mean, right now, how many of us might have seasonal affective disorder? You know, it's dark and it's snowy and stuff, but in a few months we'll be outside. And there's people who it's not just really about, pick up your bootstraps and you'll be fine. You know, like the old kind of comments we'd say, there are things they actually need to work through. And everyone is so unique and so different. And I mean, for all three callers, I think counseling is fantastic. And I love the idea of being able to sit down with a counselor, even if it's not you who's struggling, like if it's your daughter, if it's your wife, you, like, I mean, we can always go and say, hey, my friend's struggling. Can you give me some strategies on how to help them? I mean, one of the number one things for mental health to make it, you know, to make your church or your workplace an accepting place is just to talk about it. That's why I'm really happy that we had a chance to spend most of our time talking about mental health today, because there's so many of us and so many listeners who struggle, who've never told anyone. And I think that isolation is what almost drives us into deeper depression. So, of course, our faith in God's with us, and then we also live in community, and that's where right. I think our churches need to become, those oasis places of community where you can deal with and walk through these tough journeys with fellow Christians who are either going through the same journeys or just people who are there to support each other.
Powerful stuff. Brett Ullman, our guest, and Alicia Bellingham joins us here. Alicia is the one who alerted us to the fact that Brett would be coming to town. And Alicia, I don't know if you've been listening today, but wow, some powerful stuff. There's going to be a lot of folks who are going to want to know how to be a part of this thing, but it's specifically targeted for youth. Who can come, and how do you get to this thing?
Sure. Thank you so much for talking about this event, Neil. We've been praying about this event for months, and the team that's been organizing it, and Laura Holthouse, who's been leading the whole event, and our pastor and leadership team, we're just so excited about what God's going to do, and we're just praying expectantly, knowing that He's going to do something awesome over this weekend. The event is held at Forest View Church of God, which is at 1250 Saunders Settlement Road in Niagara Falls. And the event is held Friday, March 11th from 7 until 9:30 p.m. and Saturday, March 12th from 10 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. And on both days, Brett will be speaking, and the brothers McClurg, who have come to Kingdom Bound and different events in the area, will be performing both days and leading in worship. So we're just really excited about the whole event. And it's open to anyone ages 12 up till 99. And we say 12 years old just because of the different topics that will be talked about. And obviously families should use their own discretion and just decide for themselves about that. But child care will be available for adults who come. So if mom and dad are coming and have children who are under the age of 7 or under the age of 12, excuse me, they're more than welcome to bring the kids, and there will be child care and activities available for them. And during the second talk on Saturday that Brett gives, that's strictly for parents or adults, and the teenagers will be taken out and will be having their own session with some men from the church and different men who lead in areas and in ministries in Niagara Falls, which will be really exciting as well.
Okay. And you did say 12 to 99 years of age. Okay.
Yes.
Because I mean, I've got a pair of readers on, but I'm thinking if that says 99, I better double check because I don't want to be off base. All right, so obviously a lot of people can benefit from this thing. Forest View Church of God has a phone number. If you know it, please share it, or maybe a website, because people are going to want to follow up on this.
Yeah, we encourage people to pre-register. This is a free event, but we're just asking for people to pre-register so that we can accommodate seating. You can go to forestviewchurch.org, and there is a link there for a website that you can click on to register for one or both days. On Saturday, we will be selling boxed lunches for $5. That includes pizza, salad, and a drink. So that will be available on Saturday. And again, just the address is 1250 Saunders Settlement Road, and the website forestviewchurch.org.
Okay.
And the phone number is 297-6584.
Boy, am I glad you showed up, Alicia, because I couldn't read this if I tried.
Oh.
The type is a little small, and it's set in kind of a dark setting, and I'm a little colorblind, so I was like, please get Alicia on the phone, because she's going to have to help us with this. But Brett,
oh boy, well, I'm sorry about that. That was
no,
my
you're fine.
That,
thank you for filling in the details. And Brett, I want to give you a chance here just to kind of tie a ribbon on this of some kind, and from your heart, invite people to come out, because obviously there's going to be some really heavy but important issues discussed, and ultimately I think everyone's going to benefit if they're willing to come. So just an invitation, Brett, from your heart.
Well, if anyone's able to come out, it's a great opportunity to begin to look at conversations from media, faith, and culture on the Friday night. You know, how do we engage the world? And it's not a sensationalistic look at music and media, but like we can look at it. And really the answer with that conversation is to get a biblical worldview. If we have a biblical worldview, we'll have biblical values, which will shape our biblical actions. Pornography and then mental health. But if you're not able to come, the truth is the challenge is still to walk through those things. Like, we all have to find a way to equip and empower our kids and to learn ourselves how to connect our ancient faith with this modern world. So my website's just my name. It's brettallman.com. And on that, I have it's a blog, and I have hundreds and hundreds of resources from everything from mental health to parenting. I really just blog the best resources I can find. Most of them are not even mine. I just kind of glean from our Christian culture, you know, some of the best stuff, and I post that for them. So no matter what they're going through, there's some great resources for them, and I would challenge them. If they can come out, wonderful. And if they can't, these are still big topics we have to address and walk through.
All right, Brett, Brett Allman, Ullman, and it's dot what?
Dot com.
BrettAllman.com. Brett, thanks again. Alicia as well, thanks for joining us. God bless you guys, and may the Lord be with you on March 11th and 12th. What a powerful weekend you've got lined up.